Welcome back to the Autoblog Podcast. I'm Greg Migliori. We've got an awesome show for you this week. It's auto show season. We're right in the thick of it. News editor Joel Stocksdale, who will be joining me here in just a minute, just got back from the Munich Motor Show. It's an interesting experience, let's put it that way, a bit different than what we've seen before at the Frankfurt Motor Show. This is the new venue, and it's a new show. So we'll get into that. We'll also look ahead to the Detroit Auto Show. That's coming up next week. Press days kick off on Wednesday. We'll bring you all of the reveals, all the previews, all the galleries, everything that you know and love from Autoblog. And I'll have a conversation with the executive director of the Detroit Auto Dealers Association, which runs the show, Rod Alberts. So that'll be coming up a little bit later in the show. We also, Joel specifically, drove a couple of VW ID models, the ID4 and the ID7. So let's go back to Munich. This is your first time at this show. I believe it was the first time they had the show because it used to be in Frankfurt. Lots of different things to unpack. It was primarily a German car show, frankly, as we expected. That seems to be the model, if you will, is each auto show maybe has a niche as opposed to being like full service like they used to be. We'll see how that plays out. But why don't we talk about the GTI? That was a pretty cool one. I think a lot of our enthusiast readers and listeners will like that. Tell me what happened there.
Yeah, this was one of my favorites as well. It's based on the ID2 All concept from a little while back, but it's been GTI-ified. It's got beefed up fender flares, it's got front and rear spoilers and tow hooks and side skirts and big wheels, and you know, it looks exactly like what you'd hope from a GTI. It's got the little red stripe on the front grille. It looks great. It looks like a sporty, fun little GTI hatchback. And it is a little bit on the little side. It's a little bit shorter than the Golf GTI that we know. It's about 6 inches shorter, but the wheelbase is only about an inch shorter. And in person, it really doesn't feel really that much smaller than a Golf model. Like this, I think this would be comfortable for the US market. Not really much in the way of specs, because it is technically a concept at this point, but it is front motor, front wheel drive, likely to all. And Volkswagen has confirmed that it will come to production. It hasn't been confirmed for the US yet. However, it is being currently considered for America. So, you know, if you're out there and you like it, make it known to your friends and your dealers that you want this if you want to see it in the US.
Yeah, this is a tasty one. I like hot hatches like this. It's a very, I think, modern, sleek look on, you know, what we've come to know and love as the GTI in the past, with that familiar Volkswagen design language, but also electric. So, I mean, you wrote that we highly approve. I couldn't say it better. A baby G-Class. This would be electric. This was making the rounds in the days after the show. I think that's interesting. I think it's something the CEO of Mercedes mentioned. He confirmed, if you will. We've kind of known this was coming. This isn't exactly breaking news, but a little bit more sort of news in the wake there of the Munich show. I think this would be a good idea. I think when you look at, you know, the Gelände wagon, as some call it, as a prestige vehicle, making it all electric will allow it to sort of appeal to, you know, many of its sort of affluent core audience. And, you know, doing a smaller version just makes it a little more accessible. You know, I drove a Jeep Wrangler, the plug-in hybrid, the 4xe. We'll get to that in an upcoming podcast. And I can tell you, there's certainly an audience for people who like off-roaders, especially ones that are electric in some form. And I think this is a good idea. What do you think of this, Joel?
Yeah, this was a little bit news to me because I'd been busy with a lot of other Munich stuff, so I hadn't seen the report until just recently. And it's definitely interesting. I mean, the G-Wagon is incredibly popular, is a great image. I mean, at least among people that like them. It can be a little bit polarizing for some other people, but Yeah, I mean, it makes sense to offer something with the same vibes or similar vibes for less money and maybe a smaller package. I mean, kind of like Ford Bronco and Ford Bronco Sport. I mean, why wouldn't Mercedes try to capitalize on that?
Yeah, that's a great way to break it down, actually. So yeah, more to come on that. Potentially 2026, maybe, for that one. We'll see. What do you make of that Cupra concept? This isn't exactly a brand we cover, but it's also one of the great things about European auto shows is a brand like different brands that we don't cover will show up with an awesome concept or something that really turns heads and is striking. A lot of times in European auto shows, you will see they tend to get a little more invested in the concept space, which I think is a great thing. It's called the Dark Rebel. It's a shooting brake, although honestly, I guess I get where it comes from that, but I also think it really looks like kind of a supercar. You know, maybe I'm from the pictures, I'm not picking up on all the proportions. It's really this far out thing. It's a brand that you probably have never heard of because it's a very European brand that's owned by Volkswagen through one of its subsidiaries called, is it Seat? I'm not sure if I'm saying that right. They're the Spanish sort of, brand, if you will, that VW owns. So long way of saying it, I think this thing looks awesome. Did you actually get a chance to see it on the show floor?
Didn't catch it on the show floor, but I did see it at Volkswagen Group Night. I mean, you can't ignore it. It's extremely low, very long, and it has more scoops and vents than most Batmobiles. It is bold. And the thing is, that's about all you can really say about it because there is nothing else about it. There's not even like hypothetical like power and range and things like that. It really is basically just a styling exercise. We would expect to see some of the styling appear on future Cupra production models, but I mean, they didn't say anything about any kind of intention to produce it or any kind of hypothetical technical details. It's literally just, we made this crazy thing, here, take a look. A little bit like the Buick Wildcat concept that we saw a little bit ago that now styling cues from that are showing up on production Buick cars.
It reminds me of the Peugeot Onyx concept I saw quite a few years ago at the Paris Motor Show. Readers at the time were really blown away by it, but at the end of the day, it's just kind of an awesome concept that you see at a motor show in Europe, and who knows, it'll probably never see it again. So cool. Let's jump over to the BMW, the Vision concept. Is it, how do you pronounce that? I'm not up on my German.
I think it's roughly pronounced like New Class.
New Class? Okay. Yeah. That's another handsome looking concept that in this case, there's likely more practical applications for BMW, which is a brand we obviously get here.
Yeah. This is another thing that I'm pretty excited about because I really dig the looks. It's really clean. It's really athletic. I appreciate that it doesn't have the kind of bucktooth kidney grills of some other recent BMW models. And this one is kind of previewing what a lot of people are saying is going to be a future 3 Series sedan. So this is a little bit more relevant. And it's got fun little details. I was looking at it on the show floor, and in the side skirts, there's embossed in there the words that say, "The future is bright," with a little smiley face. And, there's something, I mean, it's a little bit corny, but it's also, kind of sweet, especially when for quite some time, we've been dealing with kind of a dystopian view of the future and kind of futuristic design. Maybe not necessarily without reason. I mean, you look at the news today and can feel pretty bleak, but, you know, it's nice to have like a more positive view of the future with like a little message like that. And like, I love the very airy interior with like the bright yellow corduroy fabric. I love it's really neat. There's actually a lot of this car that kind of reminds me of sort of 1970s concept car design. Very angular, wedgy, sleek. The cloth and the color scheme inside especially is very 70s. But you know, I think it really works on this car.
Yeah, it's a cool concept. I think, you know, you see some of the lineage going back to say the 2002, things like that. I think it goes back to a more optimistic period of automotive design. It's clean. It moves very far away from everything BMW design has become in recent years. Busy, creased grills. You know, you look at everything from like, you know, the X7 to the XM, you know, very complicated designs in some ways. And this is almost like, you know, to use a cliche, it's a clean sheet design. And I think it really works for them. This would make me very excited about a future generation of the 3 Series when I look at this.
Yeah. And I like that it kind of shows that a minimalist design doesn't have to look either boring or kind of brutalist, because there are like nice little nuances, some gentle curves here and there to kind of soften it, but it's also got plenty of kind of interesting angles and lines and that keep it from like being boring either. I'm quite fond of this car.
Yeah, you know who does a good job with that, I think, is Polestar. If you look at, you know, some of their vehicles, the 2 and the 3, maybe not so much the 1, but that was more of a almost like a one-off, you know, limited edition version that was meant to just get the brand on people's radar. But I think that minimalistic design that is just, you know, classically, simply beautiful. And I think, you know, they're doing a good job with that. Admittedly, it's so understated, it may be a little boring. I think this BMW concept's a little bit more boisterous, so that's a good thing. But it can be done. So,
and I appreciate that it is minimalist and it also has some warmth to it also. And I think a lot of that does come from like the materials on the inside, the colors and textures. But I think that's something that we've lost a little bit of with a lot of kind of, well, current minimalist design.
Indeed, indeed. All right, so the CLA is not exactly a minimalist design. I think it's still attractive. You know, Mercedes definitely showed up and showed out in its sort of home show. It's techy. You know, I would say this, it reminds me of almost every other Mercedes concept we've been looking at for the last 10, 15 years, with that kind of like almost vacuum cleaner nose, the wheels, it's swoopy, which I like. Sometimes these end up looking or leading to the production versions. Sometimes they don't. You know, I think in some ways Mercedes has had a lot of good looking concepts, and they don't always translate them quite as directly to the road-going models as I would like to see. But this is another looker.
Yeah. I don't like this as much as the BMW.
Okay. How come?
Well, there's still a little bit of the kind of the issue that I have with a lot of the current Mercedes EQ lineup, and that's that they all look a little bit lozenge or blob shaped, and there's still a fair bit of that going on here. Now there is less of that, which I do significantly, I really do appreciate that there are details that help to kind of break it up and add highlights. I actually really like the chrome highlights over the wheel arches that kind of highlight those, actually a little bit Audi like. I also like that the fenders are just, they're just puffed up just a little bit more, so it's got a little bit more shape to the car. And that's another thing that helps out. And it does have more of sort of the CLS CLA coupe shape, which makes it a little bit sleeker and sportier than some of the more traditional EQ vehicles that look a little puffy.
Yeah. I mean, frankly, I think this looks better than the EQ lineup that they currently are selling. It looks like it is a little maybe overdone, but because it's just, yeah, it does have that kind of, you know, lozenge shape, if you will, bubble shape to it. But it's still, I think the proportions are better. It's got more of like a car look than some of the, you know, electric cars they have, especially the SUVs out there too. You know, I think it's better than, say, the EQS or the EQE SUV or, you know, car version, if you will. So there's that. I think it's interesting to see them kind of still investing in the CLA line, you know, trying to reach out at that lower end of their lineup, but still make them, you know, attractive, beautiful cars. We saw this when they, you know, they brought the CLA to the United States about a decade ago. And the big deal was it was under $30,000, which was, you know, stunning for a Mercedes at the time. And it quickly got over that, you know, that pretty quickly, let's put it that way. And they also were selling the A-Class, which was a little more, I would almost compare it to like an Audi A1, A2, A3, maybe. Very like austere. And it, like, a lot of people thought they were overloading that zone, if you will, in the United States. Like, you don't need that many small cars. So, and the CLA has been the survivor along with the GLA. And, you know, again, I think it's good to see them invest in this, in this space with electrification, and also maintain some, you know, design, like chutzpah, you know, like they're going for it here. So,
yeah. And while I'm not as big on the exterior, I think the interior is a bit more successful, and it's very much the opposite of the BMW that we were just talking about. This is much more maximalist. It's just covered in ambient lighting and chrome strakes and big screens all the way across the dashboard. And, you know, it's a lot. And I can definitely see how it wouldn't work for some people, but I'm kind of digging it. To be honest, it actually reminds me a bit of sort of 50s American design, in the sense that it's just,
can see it, yeah.
It's really flashy, lots of chrome metal, and like, if ambient lighting was something that was easy to do in the 50s, you better believe that General Motors and Ford would have been stuffing that in everything that they possibly could.
Yeah, it's a good look.
Yeah, I think it's neat. It's a very different feel than, say, the BMW, but that's not necessarily a bad thing. And I think it's good to have that kind of variety, because everybody likes a little bit of a different thing. So the more differentiation there can be, I think that's good.
Definitely. I think, you know, really when I look at, you know, modern manufacturers, only Lincoln, I think, is the only one that's done a good job of really capitalizing on its heritage to, you know, bring the feeling of a retro interior. And I think there's a lot of ground you could cover there. You know, interiors were boring for like three decades, and now we are seeing some real attitude in there, and Mercedes is good at it. So yeah, I'm with you. That interior it's pretty slick there, and frankly, I think, and it's a concept, who doesn't like concepts a lot of times, right? But it also seems a little more balanced than some of their production vehicles with those enormous screens. Like, this has a little more, it's a little bit more balance in there with their use of lighting and the way it's all laid out. So, you know, it's a very attractive interior.
Yeah. And I do just briefly want to cover another thing that I don't know. It's not working for me, but I think it probably does work for some people. The number of little Mercedes stars on this car is absurd. The grille is made up of little stars. The headlights are effectively two Mercedes badges. And even the sunroof is full of more little three-pointed stars.
Yeah.
They do not want you to forget that this is a Mercedes. Ever. It actually... I mean, lots of people complain about the giant grille on the BMWs, but I feel like this is kind of Mercedes' version of that, of kind of having the icon of your brand in your face all the time. Like, BMW went with, like, we're going to put the biggest kidneys we can on some cars. Mercedes is like, we're not going to do that, but we're going to put the logo everywhere.
That's a, yeah. You know, I will say this, when you're, you know, both these brands have such great logos, great iconic crests, emblems. Why wouldn't you do that? You know, there is a little bit too much, but in some ways I feel like Cadillac, for example, and Lincoln, they undersell their cars with the way they could sort of badge them and get more of that, more of the logos in front of people. So, you know, and of course it's always fun when you see like some E-Class with no badges on it. You're like, well, what's going on there? That means he's probably got like an AMG and he's, you know, trying to be a Q-ship or something. That's also kind of fun.
Yeah, it's, I never really thought about that, but I think you're right. It's weird to think that Cadillac and Lincoln are the ones that are restrained in their branding.
Yeah.
Because that's not something that you would really think of from the company that gave us the Escalade.
Right. Yeah.
But it's totally true. Like, it's not, especially the new IQ electric one, the branding is not really that in your, I mean, it's a big vehicle, but like, if you didn't know from like kind of the styling and stuff that it's a Cadillac, it's not necessarily shouting it. Maybe they should change that a little bit, because boy, people liked the Escalade for its brashness and boldness.
And they both have good logos. That's the other thing too. You know, there's definitely some car brands that you're, what does that say? You know, like Kia, for example, like I think they have some work to do on their logo. Other brands that have less history, less of an actual just, you know, brand heritage. But Lincoln and Cadillac could probably do a little bit more. So let's close things out here in the news section with the Mini Cooper electric. I think that's cool. These things are going to be pocket rockets to drive, I think. They're pretty nifty. I think, you know, Mini is British, but they're owned by a German brand, if you will, BMW. So the Munich Motor Show is a great place for them to show this car. What did you think of this?
Yeah, so the electric Minis are about the things that I was most excited about with the Munich show. Probably, I mean, the ID GTI is like just behind it, and then also the BMW New Class.
Yeah.
And part of that is just because these Minis are actually coming to production. These aren't concepts. And there's just a whole lot that I like about the design on them. Exterior design, I don't know that like either of them really blow me away all that much, but the interiors are what really get me excited about them. They are so unique and fun. I haven't seen a car company have this much fun with color and texture in quite some time. The regular Mini Cooper, you can get like this cloth houndstooth wrap on the dashboard, and on the Countryman, there's this cool gradient pattern that you can get, and they're available with like kind of brass gold trim on the vents and doors and funky steering wheels. They kind of follow the Tesla model with just a big center screen for your infotainment and instruments, but it's a big circular screen in keeping with past Mini models. And they will come with a head-up display, so you won't have to always look over to your right to see your speed and things. You can have that right in front of you. It's just, they're really fun, and I'm excited about that.
Yeah, I think Mini does a good job of capturing the emotional and connected feel of driving, and I think it's really natural for them to extend that to a lineup of electric cars. They've tweaked the design a little bit, but it's still very much a Mini. I don't think you ever want to go too far afield with, you know, who they are and what they do. Interiors are fun, and that's when Mini's at its best. Their interiors are fun. You might remember the openometer, whatever they called that convertible feature. It's whimsical, it's cheeky, it's fun. So, I mean, you don't buy this car if you're looking to drive like a microwave. You drive this car because it's fun. So that's heartening to see.
Yeah. And, you know, the specs are big improvements for the electric Minis. The regular, like, hardtop hatchback Mini Cooper, it's going to be available in two versions, the E and the SE. The E has basically the same power specs as the current one, so 184 horsepower and 214 pound-feet of torque. And, like, that's fantastic in the current one. It's the part of the reason I'm so excited about these is that the current Mini Cooper SE is such a hoot to drive. It handles so great. It feels like a normal Mini, but you get the response and torque of an electric motor out of it. So it feels like a big electric go-kart. It's a lot of fun. That base E also comes with a slightly bigger 40 kilowatt hour battery pack, which is rated for 190 miles on the WLTP cycle. We would not expect it to get that much on the EPA cycle. It would be significantly less, but it should still come out to more than the 110 miles-ish on the current Mini Cooper SE. And then the new Mini Cooper SE, that one gets more power. It's 218 horsepower, 243 pound-feet of torque, and it also gets a 54 kilowatt-hour battery that gets 250 miles on the WLTP cycle. Again, if it comes to America, that would be significantly less. I'd be hoping for around the 200-mile mark. It's hard to say exactly, though.
That's a fair amount of range for a pretty small car, you know. I mean, just because when you think about the size of the batteries you need to get that kind of range. But also, it's a small, light car. So, yeah, it's the other side of it.
And I've debated a little bit with some other friends in this industry about whether the range is enough for, like, the U.S. market. I think that bigger battery one would work all right for the States, especially if it's priced right, because this is still kind of a niche model. Somebody that wants to buy the Mini hatchback wants to buy it because they like the Mini hatchback. It's not necessarily the most practical option, but it's the one that they just really like. And if you want the more practical option, there's the Countryman that offers four full doors and more space. And that one is going to offer actually even more power for each of its trim levels. The regular E version with a single motor. I also should have mentioned the Mini hatchbacks will be front motor, front drive. The Countryman, the base Countryman E will be front motor, front drive, 204 horsepower, 184 pound-feet of torque. And then the SE gets two motors for all-wheel drive with 313 horsepower and 364 pound-feet of torque. Ranges also maybe a little bit low for this size of vehicle. The single motor is 287 miles on WLTP. And SE is 269 miles WLTP. So I would guess like 200 to like low 200s in EPA mileage, which for this size of vehicle is maybe a little bit on the low side. considering that you can get like 260 miles from Chevy Bolt and Hyundai Kona.
Yeah. No, I mean, basically, for a lot of things in this segment, you buy it because it's emotional and you like it and it's fun, you know, that type of thing. So, all right. So that's our news report from the Munich Motor Show. Any general vibes? You know, I mean, I believe you've gone to Frankfurt. I went to Frankfurt quite a few times. This is essentially the every other year IAA, as they call it, the German Motor Show. You know, just real quick, did it measure up? What do you think?
I was a bit disappointed with it. Part of that was because I was on a bit of a time crunch because I had some other obligations with Volkswagen in the second half of the day. So I didn't have a huge amount of time at the show. And I hadn't realized that it was kind of split up. So there was this main, there was the part of the show at the convention center, but then there was also a part of the show that was in like downtown Munich, where it seems some of the new car reveals were actually on display. They weren't at the main convention center. And even if I had realized that it was split up quite in that fashion, I'm not entirely sure I would have had time to get over there and back and get to my other Volkswagen stuff that I had to do. That aside, in the main convention center, it was mostly suppliers, and that was a little bit disappointing. And the displays were a bit tight. It was really hard to like take photos and things. And in true German car show tradition, it was spread out across multiple halls, and because the suppliers and automakers were interspersed between each other, you couldn't, like, for us, we cover product and consumer stuff, so we're not necessarily looking at the supplier things, but we still had to go across basically the entire convention center to get to each automaker, which would also apply if, say, you're a member of the public and you wanted to mainly go see the car companies and not the suppliers. What I'm saying is, like the Frankfurt show, although thankfully not as big, lots and lots of walking in halls that were not very air conditioned, again, because Germany. And yeah, basically the only automakers that were really on display were the German car companies, but then also a decent number of Chinese automakers. So I did get to take a little bit of a look at some of them. I mainly stopped by BYD, which stands for Build Your Dreams, and MG, which is the same brand that you know as the British sports car company, but has been owned by, believe it is SAIC, the Chinese automaker. They've owned them for quite some time now, and MG is now a fully electric brand, and BYD have been selling their cars in Europe for quite some time. I did get to see the MG Cyberster Roadster, and that does look actually quite good. And it's bigger than I realized. It's definitely like sized like BMW Z4, maybe even just a tad bigger. But it's got crazy scissor doors like a Lamborghini and arrow-shaped turn signals, and it's actually a pretty nifty thing. Though, a lot of the other Chinese cars, at least on the outside, looked quite dull. BYD especially, and it's a bit strange because the interiors on some of them are pretty nifty. The best example of this, I think, is the BYD Atto 3. Which on the outside is one of the most boring, nondescript-looking crossover things that you've seen. But you open up the door, and it's got this crazy swoopy dash that almost looks like it's sort of slightly melted. And it's got crazy aluminum-look switches and knobs and things. It's got a screen that can switch from portrait to landscape. And then the doors, the door pockets, are designed to look like guitar strings, and actually you can pluck the strings and they each kind of make different notes. And it's just funny that it's got this kind of zany interior, but the most boring exterior. But it was interesting to see the presence of Chinese automakers there, because they were probably equal to the Germans, which is, I'd say, pretty significant for the German auto show.
Yeah, that's a really good point. I think it speaks to the evolving nature of auto shows. You know, some of the newer manufacturers that want to try to resonate with consumers, especially in markets they're trying to target, can really get in there, because some of the traditional OEMs are pulling back from auto shows. You know, you look at, you know, the general strategy for, say, like Honda, Nissan, to a lesser extent, Toyota, even the Detroit 3, if it's not like, you know, like the Detroit Auto Show, which we're going to talk about here in a minute, you know, they tend to be no shows. So there's certainly an opportunity to get some, you know, widespread coverage, which is obviously, it's intriguing for our readers and it's good for them. Any other highlights from, you know, the Chinese brands?
Not especially. One of the other things that I noticed, that these Chinese brands were definitely focusing on like mainstream models. They weren't really showing anything particularly outlandish except for like the MG Cyberster. So definitely kind of very mainstream automotive type stuff.
All right, cool. Well, then let's transition over. You did get to drive two Volkswagens while you were in Europe, ID4, but also the ID7, brief loops, the ID7. Let's start with that one. Most people saw it for the first time at CES, or heard about it around CES in January. This is a large, swoopy sedan. What did you think of that thing?
Yeah, so one of the first things about it that struck me is that the ID7 is actually pretty large. It's bigger than ID4. It's very much like a Accord, maybe even slightly bigger. It probably, what contributes to that is it's definitely much taller than, say, like a Accord or Camry. That's, I'm guessing, a factor of it being an electric platform, so you've got all your batteries underneath, and so everything above it sits a little bit higher up, and so you have to kind of like lift the roof a little bit more to make sure that you're getting the same kind of interior space that you would if you didn't have those batteries underneath. But, you know, it drives really well. It's kind of your typical Volkswagen. It's quite well composed. Because it is very big, it did feel a little heavy, but, you know, it still turned in fairly quickly. It's very comfortable. Impressively quiet. I actually got my first experience on unrestricted Autobahn, and I actually took it up to about 113 miles per hour. And totally, totally silent inside. Quite impressive. Yeah, I think it'll be a very nice option for a lot of people. And I like that it's definitely a sedan-looking thing, but it is a hatchback, so you do get a fair bit of practicality. I am guessing it's going to be more expensive than ID4 because it is larger and it's got more luxury features available. Like, it's going to have massaging seats available and adjustable suspension and actually quite a good augmented reality heads-up display, like on par with Mercedes, which, you know, that's saying that Mercedes augmented reality is pretty good. So on the whole, ID7 is quite good. And I also drove ID4, which is being updated for 2024. And thank goodness, the infotainment has been fixed for the most part. If you're getting it with the big battery, you get basically the exact same infotainment system that you're getting on the ID7, which is vastly more responsive. It's not stuttering and lagging and being cantankerous like before. It has two bars of slightly customizable icons that are always on display. So the bottom one is mainly climate controls, and you can adjust some of the shortcuts for like air vent position and like seat heating and things for that one. And then the top one, you can change to have like whatever your favorite infotainment functions are, whether that's radio, navigation, etc. And then the homepage has lots of custom layouts and things. On the whole, it works quite well. It looks good. It's very responsive. And the new software comes with new hardware that also includes illuminated touch bar sensor or buttons. One of the biggest complaints on the ID4 has been the fact that the temperature and volume slider touch buttons were not backlit, so were basically impossible to see at night. Now, there is a catch. This only comes on the large battery versions of the ID4. If you get the small battery one, you still get the pretty crummy infotainment system that they're still using on the, like, 2023 ID4s. So, we would strongly recommend you opt for the larger battery if you are considering it for the 2024 model year. It is disappointing because feels like it wouldn't be that big of an expense to go ahead and include the new infotainment on all of them, but here we are. The other big thing is that power has increased significantly. They are basically taking the ID7 motors and using them in the ID4. So the rear drive ID4 will go from about 200 horsepower to 282 horsepower. And then the all-wheel drive one will go from 295 horsepower to about 330 horsepower. The numbers for that aren't completely final yet, and that's also why we don't have range numbers yet. They're still finalizing that. But we should have that information soon, since the production of the 2024 is supposed to start at the end of the year.
Sounds good. I've been a big fan of the ID4. I think it's a strong vehicle, if you will, that gives, I think it brings a mainstream electric experience for, you know, a wide variety of consumers. I was just talking about this on the podcast last week. I don't think it'd be the worst thing in the world if they let you get a Volkswagen badge for it. They may have gone too far with their initial approach on that. Let's put it that way. But I don't know. If I were going to buy an ID4, I would put Volkswagen on it. It might be fun, but I digress.
And, you know, and it still drives pretty well. Like, again, very composed. A little bit on the firmer side, but I don't mind that. And I think that's kind of nice in the smaller car. It feels a little bit more playful and a little bit more responsive than, like, the ID7. The steering, something that I did want to bring up. Super accurate. Not too slow or anything. Very, very light in normal mode. Sport mode adds some much-needed heft, and I kind of wish that the sport configuration was actually just the standard one, because it's genuinely not that heavy. It just feels good. Like, they could have made that the default steering setting. And, you know, it felt spunky. It's not gonna, like, change your world, and it's not gonna change your worldview or anything, but, you know, good power. And certainly more than a lot of other, like, single motor options out there, which I think will be appealing. And I did notice a bit more wind noise than I was expecting on the highway. And I'm not just talking about, like, going at 100 miles an hour. Like, even at just normal, sort of, like, 70 to 80 miles an hour, there's more wind noise than I expected. But other than that, you know, it's a comfortable, solid choice. And, you know, it's built in Tennessee, so it qualifies for all the federal tax credits if you buy one.
Yeah. Sounds good. Yeah, that's very relevant information these days when you're trying to figure out which electric car you might want to get. You got to, you know, if you want to make it perhaps more affordable, you know, you certainly want to look for one that's locally built, if you will. So, all right. Well, now is a good time to transition into a conversation with Rod Alberts. He's the executive director of the DADA. That's the Detroit Auto Dealers Association that puts on the Detroit Auto Show. So let's have a listen. Thanks for taking the time this week, Rod. I know it's a very busy time. This is sort of Super Bowl season here. Let's get right into it.
Sure. Thanks, Greg.
All right. Thanks for coming on. Now, for Autoblog, we're most interested in the new car reveals. Can you tell me about the process of, you know, how you were able to get you know, considerable buy-in from the Detroit Three this year for the press conference schedule.
Yeah, you know, things have changed a lot in the industry since the in the last 5 years. It was for auto shows in particular, and with social media and other ways of spending marketing money. And what we found during the pandemic is a lot of the debuts did go to the internet, because that really was the only route to go. But it was kind of going that way anyway prior. But, you know, I've been with the show a long time, so I went through all those years. And some years we would have 50 to 70 intros. I know, hard to believe, but there was a period of time in there that it was all about that, with shows like ours in Frankfurt, Paris. So coming back, and there's this reimagination and reinvention of the show that we've all gone through around the world. Frankfurt moved to Munich, and Geneva actually took a sabbatical too. But having those shows that were media driven have all gone through the process now. They've had to scale back on that part of it. You can't totally live on the media driven auto show style anymore. And it's gone to an activation driven, experiential, and a balance, more of a balance of the purpose of auto shows. So the big shows like that, that were media driven, when we came back to it, to get to your question now, really came down to having a handful. If you can have 5, 6, 7 debuts, you still have substantial enough debuts and a media draw to bring media in from the US or you know, around the world at times. If you just have the one, I think the one-offs are more difficult for people to go to, maybe like yourself. But if you have 5 or 6, so we knew if we went in there and really concentrated with the big three, partnered up, and knowing it's their hometown and backyard, which is our strength to have them, we've been working with them for the past half a year on bringing those product in. So a bit of that appeal to the fact that it is your backyard. The big three show, you know, they got so many product coming out now. Think about that too, between hybrid, ICE and electric, that there's a little bit more to be shared, and they gave part of that to the show this year, and we're very appreciative. So it was a long process, but I think the real message is there's a scaled back part to big shows and how they operate in regard to that media driven auto show.
Yeah. Okay. Now I noticed Toyota actually put out a pretty splashy announcement this week about their presence at the show, and you know, some of the things they'll be doing. What exactly are they doing, and how important is it for you to try to maybe pick off one or two sort of non-domestic, non-Detroit automakers and get them into the fold?
You know, that's a great question. If you, there's no secret to the fact that Detroit, 85 to 90% of the sales in the metro Detroit area and throughout the region in general is the 15 or 16 brands of the big three. And Toyota is a great example of, you know, one of the major companies around the world. They've always been an incredible partner, and in good faith, always wanted to be a part of the show. Didn't really matter how much the market share they had. And we've been good friends over the years, but the key is that they did want to come in. They want to be a part of the show, and always have been. And I think that just is their style and who they are. The other manufacturers, you know, when you think about the market, we have to approach that a little differently now. If it's not media driven as much, but we still are going to have a couple thousand media here, which is a bit of an irony in regard to saying it's not media driven, because we do have quite a few coming in. But we have to make sure we focus too on the consumer and the technology incubator that we have in the region now, because Michigan, which is a part of ours, also is wants to show to the world that we're the startup capital of the world. We have mobility technology, and whether it's flying cars at some point in time in the future or what is current and what people have. But getting to the other OEMs, what we have to do is work with all of them and make sure we give them a reason to come in, whether it is that technology that we have that could be a part of their cars, the startups that are in Michigan, or the element of just reaching the consumers here to grow the market share that they do have, albeit less in a lot of regions. We've found a way to bring a lot of men through the dealer or the regional departments, if not corporate partial support. So what you're finding is you just can't expect big investments in two-story displays, the Taj Mahal type look. They're going to be coming in. If they do come in, it's to put their car on a track, on an EV track like we have, or put people behind the wheel to experience the technology. So the wake-up call for all of us and what happened the last 5 years, the acceleration, is just to find ways to make it attractive for the OEMs, cost-effective, good return on their investment, and make it a good way to reach consumers. And if we do that, and we work with the dealers, which really is the foundation of our show and has been for 100 years, we can provide that product. And that's why we ended up having the announcement of having 35 brands, because the 35 brands we have are driven partially by the dealer base, region, and corporate.
How do you manage that? You know, traditionally, you know, 10 years ago, you would go to the Detroit Auto Show and you'd roll in there and every brand was there. And sure, most of them were factory supported. How do you manage to get, like, I imagine the outreach is a little bit different, trying to explain to local dealerships why, hey, maybe they should get some cars downtown. How do you manage that process?
Yeah, if I can, if I maybe have to rephrase that a little bit for me to make sure I got it right. But the whole thing is knowing that we have every brand represented in this region, sure, just like any other market. However, the only difference is we're not going to sell as many Lamborghinis here as you're going to sell in New York or in LA, right? Or Chicago, just partially because of the weather. The other is by city too. I mean, it's just the way we're set up here and the market. But if we have that product here and we have Rolls Royces, we find ways to bring them in through the dealer. And they, if I'm answering the question correctly, maybe you have to rephrase, but we have three Rolls Royces coming in for the show. We have three McLarens, and that's a lot by scale of the number of cars they build and all that throughout the year. So representation is not difficult to create if you find the avenues that's going to make it good for the dealer and sellable to the region if they're going to support the dealer in that regard. So again, we're finding ways to make that happen, and we went an extra mile. I mean, for me, I normally didn't have to work years ago to get them in, because you get them in through the media to do a debut. Now we have to do it by bringing customers in, having special events for Lamborghini and the others that might be a buyer or a target market for them. But if you really think outside the box, there's ways, but you just can't sit back and expect it to fall in your lap. Nothing works like that anymore. I don't care if it's your business or mine. And we just went the extra mile. And my goal was to get over 30 brands in the show this year, and we're right in there.
Okay, sounds good. Now, you talked about the Michigan experience, the Michigan EV experience. I noticed there's a Tesla in there, which is kind of cool. Where's the Tesla coming from? Is that like from a local dealer or store? And how does that work?
Well, you know, it's a bit of an irony a bit, because there are no Tesla dealers per se, right? It's a different way of marketing. Mm-hmm. And it's a little outside of our normal frame. But we do know that it's a product available to the consumer. And if we're a true international show, we should have them. The Tesla, just to that, you asked the question if we had two or three. We're actually going to have 11 Teslas here.
Okay.
There's going to be 8 outside, four different models, 2 of each. That's going to be available on the weekends outside to drive by the consumer or the public. On the inside track, which has a straight stretch and a windy track too, but a serpentine, but it also has a straight stretch over a football field long, we're going to have 3 Teslas indoor. So this EV track with IBEW supporting it, because they're all about installing these chargers. But we have BMW with 3 product electric cars. We've got GMC, we've got GM, Chevrolet is going to be in this too. We got Volkswagen and Ford, I believe. So along the way, it's going to be a nice selection when they go down the show to ride the cars, and a cool track, because we're going to kind of dim the lights and put some neon lights in and really make it a cool territory. That'll be just like we have the Jeep Camp, which has a new location for their experience and Ram trucks. So the Bronco Mountain, all these things are going to be part of the show. So everything you see when you walk in is going to be experiential driven.
That's very cool. I mean, you're definitely seeing that more and more at different auto shows, the tracks, especially a lot of them with EVs. So I guess to circle back a little bit, are those Teslas from Tesla or?
Oh, no, they're actually from corporate. You know, anything they do that's got to come through corporate, because there's not that many Tesla opportunities to get the cars from the local. The stores are not that abundant with a car. So, yeah, the great thing is we went to Tesla. They were excited about it. Elon Musk must want to get into the Detroit market somehow a little bit, because I don't think they've done a whole lot of this type of thing elsewhere.
That's pretty significant. Tesla doesn't necessarily roll out their cars to a lot of places. So that's a pretty big deal, actually, to get 11 of them from Tesla corporate, I guess.
Yeah, if you get a chance, you should come down, because you can either drive right in them and take the track. Doesn't matter, rain or shine, we're going to be doing it indoors too. And when you get done with that, you can go get into maybe the Hummer or the BMW, whatever it may be, and take in the full circuit.
All right. Sounds good. Now, I'm curious, we've talked about this a little bit, but I mean, what do you see the future of auto shows? You know, they're changing. We just had one of our editors in Munich, and you know, he was like, it's very different than how Frankfurt was a few years ago. How do you see them evolving and changing?
You know, I've been going to these shows since 1990. That's a long time. That's why I'm glad this is a podcast. You know, I look different than 1990. but when you go back to it, even Frankfurt and Geneva, Tokyo, Paris, those were the major shows, and they were all about debuts, coach builders, design Pininfarina and all that type thing with a new look. Those days that we had for 20 some odd years were amazing. They were exciting. They were thrilling to see the debuts, and there would be product debuts 2 and 3 days in a row. And I mentioned earlier the change in what's happened, which is a very logical statement in regard to social media, marketing money, the pie getting, you know, spread a little bit different than it used to be in regarding all of it going to auto shows or other mediums like that. So what we have to realize, we have to reinvent the show, and change is inevitable. I'm not even talking incremental change. I'm talking dramatic change. And auto shows went through it probably as much or more than most businesses 5 years ago, 4 years ago. And we were going through it before the pandemic, but pandemic accelerated that. So getting down to what we've experienced is that and I think it'll be somebody who comes after me in the same role, they're going to have to really have some great ideas and vision, because you really, even what I'm doing today, somebody's going to have to come up with ideas to make it a little different than we're doing even. It's going to be continued evolution, continued mobility, technology, air mobility, all these things. If you think they're going away, we've got two vehicles that will on the show floor that have FAA approval of some degree, called Air and Aleph. And if you see them, they look like the Jetsons. But the day's coming, and we have to embrace that and be a part of that and make sure we keep that in mind as we take shows forward. But consumers are the end all, and we have to make sure we cater to them and work with the elements of social media and people like yourself to make it work in the right direction.
You mentioned Pininfarina. I noticed you'll have Malcolm Gladwell and the CEO of Pininfarina doing some. They're among your speakers this year. It's a little bit of a different bent than, you know, perhaps we've seen in the past from here or really any auto show. What's the thinking there?
Well, you know, anytime you're building, you test the waters a bit, but global forums of that type are vital. You know, exchange of ideas, visionary. People that can come in like a Malcolm Gladwell, sharing technology ideas from others that are part of suppliers and technology firms, startup companies that can come in. There's an endless number of those. We have 150 startups for the show, and that brought in a few people that we could then bring into our forum. But the Global Forum is a new content builder for the show. And I think from being an international show, if you want to keep that capability and foresight of moving forward with that, you've got to have content. And the media side was a great tool for us for many years, and we will still have a part of that. But content is a whole new draw, and a Malcolm Gladwell is a draw. So we want to make sure that we build this with all the foundation and the pillars that's going to make it a potentially even greater show down the road. But you got to start somewhere, and your foundation, it just doesn't become it one day. You have to build it over time. As we did with the show 30 years ago, we have to do the same as we reinvent the show today.
Speaking of that, I've noticed that in most of your messaging and branding, it's the Detroit Auto Show. For years, for decades, it was the North American International Auto Show. And those references are fewer and far between. I imagine that's intentional? And I mean, I guess what exactly is the name of the show right now as you guys are going for it?
You know, I use Detroit Auto Show. It's probably even during North American International Auto Show days, which again, I've been here since the beginning of that. The idea of that was to separate ourselves from others in North America. Just name it and build it, and you become it. The evolution of sort, the identity of Detroit being and giving it the identity back to Detroit, I think it was time to make that happen, especially with what's going on in the industry. Detroit is synonymous with mobility and cars and technology, and a new of all that too, moving forward. So we thought we'd bring Detroit back in the name, but also because people, if you Google it, more people Google Detroit Auto Show than they did North America. So there's a little bit about that pride factor for Detroit, and we want to identify with it. And it was just time. But I will say this, I still get the NAIS.com. You know, we use that. But you know, people can be, it's kind of like Batman, you know, and Adam West, whatever it was, I'm going back. But you can, you're one thing, but you're also the other. So we're still the NAIS to some degree, your alias. But Detroit Auto Show is the core and really the foundation with the big three and our suppliers and media and startups of what we have.
Okay, sounds good. Is there anything I haven't asked you would like to throw in here?
No, I think you covered it well. You know, we're the one thing I would add is that as we've built the show, we've got four or five shows in one, which is very unique. You've got your press days, which are a couple days, and we got a couple thousand media come in. We have industry and tech days, which will be the tech folks, non-media, but tech that will come in during and mix the same time. And then charity preview, which will be the event that we raised a few million dollars for kids, and then public days. And now we're adding that global forum. So if you think about it, those are multiple audiences and a lot of places spent. But the thing in the end is you really want to build something, and it's all shifting at the same time, which I find interesting. And I mean, I love the auto show business, but there's one thing for sure. If you don't like change, this is not the business to be in, because just like what you do and doing blogs like this, it's a new day, and it's one of those we all have to really take on and make sure we're ready to be a part of.
All right, sounds good. That's Rod Alberts. He is the executive director of the DADA, which puts on the Detroit Auto Show. That's the 2023 Detroit Auto Show. Of course, head to our site for full coverage. I'd like to thank my co-host Joel Stocksdale for his long travels to Munich. He had quite the week there. He was in Pebble Beach just a couple weeks before that. So definitely racking up the frequent flyer miles there. If you enjoy the Autoblog podcast, please leave a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you get the show. Send us your Spend My Money. That's podcast@autoblog.com. The mailbag is empty, so if you'd like us to spend your money or have any other questions, you can get right in there. Be safe out there, and we'll see you next week.